Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, November 17th, 2020, Section A. Dufford says businesses shouldn't be responsible for enforcement. By Caitlin Randall. Ahead of the Midland City Council voting this morning on a proposed mask mandate, Councilman Scott Dufford said he would not be supporting the ordinance. He told the Reporter-Telegram in a phone interview Monday that while he is 100% behind wearing masks, he does not believe business owners should be responsible for ensuring customers follow coronavirus protocols. We're going to have people in our community who will escalate a situation if they're told to put a mask on before they walk into a store, he said. So, to put the onus on a business, I think it pits Midlanders against Midlanders. Midland Mayor Patrick Payton last week added an item to today's meeting agenda that would require masks in enclosed public spaces after previously maintaining he would not enforce Governor Greg Abbott's statewide mask order. The proposed ordinance would direct business owners and operators of commercial entities to require patrons wear face coverings, according to a copy of the meeting's agenda. The maximum penalty for not following the ordinance would be a $500 fine. Dufford said rather than a mandate for businesses, he would prefer the council pass a resolution saying they support mask wearing and support the guidelines provided by Midland Memorial Hospital officials. All of us should wear a mask to make the rest of our Midland community feel safe, he said. But Dufford said he believes the proposed ordinance would be difficult for police officers to enforce and would also take officers away from their other duties. He added that most businesses in Midland already have signage outside their doors asking customers to wear masks. He said the only way he could see a mask mandate being enforceable is on an individual level. If law enforcement officers passed by a business and saw someone inside not wearing a mask, then decided to write that person a ticket. But to put a business owner or somebody just working at a business, to put them in a position of having to tell somebody to put on a mask, I think it just escalates problems within our community that we don't need right now, Dufford said. The City Council will vote on a first reading of the ordinance today. The meeting begins at 10 a.m. Payton posted a statement on his Facebook page last week saying he put the item on the agenda so a representative decision could be made about a mask mandate. I have placed an item on the agenda for the full representative council to debate and decide in public, he said in the post. It would be wrong to assume that anyone knows how council members and the mayor will vote on this matter. Seven deaths reported day before council to vote on mask ordinance. Midland Health Department shows county on pace to 960-plus cases during the first week since it changed the way cases are reported. By Stuart Doreen. One day before the city council decides on a mask ordinance that would put the burden of enforcement on business, the city and Midland Health Department reported seven new COVID-19-related deaths. The announcement showed one of the highest single-day reporting totals during the pandemic and brought the total number of deaths reported in Midland County since Wednesday to 16. The county's total number of deaths during the pandemic is 119. The city also reported the health department continues to struggle keeping up when it comes to daily COVID case reporting. The health department reported Monday that 171 positive cases were received November 4th, nearly 2 weeks prior. Since changing the way COVID-19 cases are reported, the city has reported cases from 6 days, October 30th through November 4th. During those 6 days, there have been 838 cases. The most COVID-19 cases that the city reported during an entire week using its old system was 561 during reports from the last week of October. Aaron Bailey, Public Information Officer for the City of Midland, explained the reason for the delay. Here is her statement. COVID-19 cases are notified by their providers where they were tested and at that time instructed on isolation. These cases are not waiting on the health department to notify them of their COVID-19 results. Our releases are confirming how many known cases of COVID-19 we have in our community that we have made contact with. Regardless if there are 2 or 200 cases, there is COVID-19 in Midland, and the precautions and mitigation efforts should remain the same. The staff here are working tirelessly 7 days a week to make contact with COVID-19 cases. The state has acknowledged our request for additional help as well. We appreciate your patience as staff works through this peak time. Of the 7 deaths reported Monday, 4 patients died Friday, 1 died Saturday, 1 died Sunday, and 1 died November 8th. All but one were being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. The other patient was being treated at Manor Park. 4 were women, 1 in her 100s, 2 in their 80s, and 1 in her 50s. The men were in their 90s, 80s, and 60s. All were listed as having underlying health conditions. City Council members will vote today on a mask ordinance that Mayor Payton announced last week would be on the agenda. Payton will not comment on the proposed ordinance until after the meeting, according to a press release from a city spokeswoman. The ordinance would direct business owners and operators of commercial entities to require patrons wear face coverings, according to a copy of the meeting's agenda. The maximum penalty for not following the ordinance would be a $500 fine, and it appears from the wording of the agenda item that the fine would be incurred by business owners who don't enforce the mandate. The decision to place this ordinance on the agenda came after Payton said last week that he would not enforce Governor Greg Abbott's order because it would be impossible for local law enforcement to do so. Abbott issued an executive order in July requiring all Texans to wear a face mask covering in enclosed public spaces and outdoor spaces when social distancing is not possible. The order left the burden for enforcement on local entities, instructing law enforcement officials to give a verbal or written warning to first-time violators and a fine not to exceed $250 for each subsequent violation. City leaders have not said what makes this ordinance easier to enforce. Central Office helps cover for absent staff on campuses. By Stuart Doreen. Central Office personnel is continuing to cover classes at Midland ISD campuses, the district said Monday. The district reported that 20 people were given assignments Monday to help with the large number of staffers being absent across the district. MISD reported that absence rates improved Monday with 374 absences across the district and only 68 instructional positions unfilled. Friday, the first Friday that secondary students were on campus this school year, there were 504 staffers absent across the district. MISD also reported 169 were unfilled and 154 were instructional positions. We sent 60 central office personnel out to campuses to cover absences on Friday, according to Elena Ladd, Chief Communications Officer for the district. Friday was a combination of COVID-related absences, positive individual on quarantine or death in the family, and coaching staff being off campus with teams. Midland ISD reported last week on its website that COVID problems spiked with 110 student or staff cases during the week of November 2nd and 116 cases through November 8th. There have been 446 confirmed cases inside the district since July. Each day we look at which campuses have the highest percentages and numbers of staff out due to COVID and their projected unfilled sub-member number for the next day, Ladd said in an email. Those campuses with the highest numbers are where we are directing personnel. We are committed to keeping instruction going and doing whatever it takes to make that happen. MISD reports 66 people commit to serve as literacy tutors by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD asked for help from the community to support literacy, and members of the community have responded. 66 people indicated they are willing and able to commit to participate in a literacy initiative, according to agenda documents that were posted on the school district's website ahead of Monday night's meeting. Midland ISD told the Reporter-Telegram last week that the initiative was a response to longitudinal academic performance data that revealed that targeted and specific literacy support is necessary for the district's elementary students. Agenda documents show the literacy initiative has a $360,000 budget. Tutors participating on campuses across the district will be paid $25 an hour. MISD Chief of Staff Katie Atkins said campuses have also reviewed the data to determine the most appropriate interventions for their students. She wrote in the agenda documents that several measures have taken place. These include data dig to identify needs and trends across the district pertaining to literacy at the elementary level. Campus feedback elicited to provide further information on types of support needed to achieve literacy goals. The development of a literacy initiative team to provide direct support on-site at campuses that is responsive to the specific needs of campuses, and campus feedback indicating the schools would benefit from community members serving as literacy tutors. These tutors will commit to supporting small groups of students for 2 to 3 hours each day for 3 to 4 days a week through late March or early April. Atkins previously told the Reporter-Telegram that the time frame and days of the week commitment would depend on what campuses need. The agenda document also stated the district was committed to continued progress monitoring of student growth in literacy skills and continued review of impacts upon student growth and development of a literacy guiding coalition. MISD notes the board approved $3.673 million in contracts to put in synthetic turf fields at Midland Freshman High School and Lee Freshman High School, $1,533,000, and running tracks and lighting at Abel Junior High, Alamo Junior High, and Goddard Junior High tracks, $1.209 million, and lighting, $929,832. Texas surpasses 20,000 virus deaths, second highest in U.S., by Acacia Coronado. Report for America, Associated Press. Austin. Texas surpassed 20,000 confirmed coronavirus deaths Monday as COVID-19 continues to surge in the United States. That is the second highest death count overall in the U.S., trailing only New York, according to researchers from Johns Hopkins University. It's the 22nd highest per capita at 69.7 deaths per 100,000 people. So far, Texas leaders have given no indication of forthcoming restrictions to keep people from gathering and spreading the virus. Instead, Republican Governor Greg Abbott in recent days has been emphasizing that new therapeutics and vaccines are expected to become available soon. A state appeals court last week sided with Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, and lifted a local shutdown order in El Paso, where mobile morgues are being trucked in to help overwhelmed hospitals and funeral homes. The El Paso County Morgue reached out to the El Paso Sheriff's Department for help after it became overwhelmed, according to El Paso Sheriff's Department Public Affairs Director Chris Acosta. Inmates of the county's detention facility were asked to help for a stipend of $2 an hour, Acosta said in a statement. According to Acosta, between 4 and 8 participants of the detention facility's trustee program have volunteered daily since November 9th. She said they are accompanied by a sheriff's deputy and 2 detention officers. and are provided with personal protective equipment. The volunteers are minimum custody inmates with misdemeanor offenses, Acosta said, and their volunteer service is temporary since we are waiting for the National Guard to take over. Texas also became America's first state to record more than 1 million confirmed COVID-19 cases last week. It also recently surpassed California, the most populous state, in recording the highest number of positive coronavirus tests. The true number of infections is likely higher because many people haven't been tested, and studies suggest people can be infected and not feel sick. During the summer, people with COVID-19 overwhelmed hospitals in Houston and in the Rio Grande Valley along the border with Mexico. But in the fall, case numbers dipped, and Abbott began relaxing some coronavirus restrictions, allowing restaurants and gyms to let more people inside. He also let county leaders decide if they wanted to reopen bars at 50% capacity. Since then, the virus has spread. Over the past 2 weeks, the rolling average number of daily new cases has increased by 3,430.4, an increase of 53.6%. Texas now ranks 31st in the country for new cases per capita, with 428.3 new cases per 100,000 people over the past 2 weeks. One in every 417 people in Texas tested positive in the past week. Meanwhile, the U.S. Supreme Court said Monday that the Texas Department of Criminal Justice had substantially met the demands of inmates at a Houston area facility for safety equipment. The court agreed with the federal appeals court, which previously canceled a federal judge's April order for TDCJ to provide inmates with hand sanitizer, masks, and unrestricted access to soap. Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan dissented.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, November 17th, 2020, Education section. MISD creates support center to help at-risk families, from staff reports. A new initiative by Midland ISD's Student Services Department aims to serve the needs of the district's at-risk families. The new Family Support Center will assist families by connecting them with a full spectrum of support, according to a press release from MISD. This will be a one-stop shop for families needing assistance, Student Services Director Jill McCall said in the release. We won't need to point them to a variety of different agencies. We'll be able to give families all the resources they need in one place. The Family Support Center is collaborating with nonprofit agencies throughout the city to provide things such as food, clothing, including school uniforms, legal assistance, and counseling services. We saw the need to bring all these resources together. Families experiencing crisis already have enough on their plates without going to multiple different agencies, said McCall, who pitched the plan after recognizing the needs many families face. Let's provide what they need right here. The center also will provide welcome packs for new families that can include essentials such as soap and shampoo, toothpaste, towels, pots and pans, socks and underwear, according to the release. If a family is experiencing these types of problems, lack of basic needs, there's no way the student is learning, said Family Support Specialist Chalice Phillips. Providing these services to the family helps create an environment where the kids can be successful in school. The center already has provided assistance to more than 50 families. Student Services is preparing a hospitality area at Central Office that will welcome families seeking assistance. Our families are high stress when they arrive, so we want to make them as comfortable as possible. Thanks to the generosity of the Warren Charitable Foundation, United Way, and others, we're creating an area for children with books, puzzles, games, and space for artwork. We are so thankful for the support the community has shown us. Teachers need to motivate students to reach the end zone. If paid by DJ Rambo. If patience is a virtue, it's extra hard for those of us in education to have that virtue nowadays. Teachers are facing plenty of challenges this year with no end in sight. It is very discouraging for those in the trenches to continue the fight. Yet, it is times like these that are truly testing each of us to see what we are fully capable of. We may feel like we have given all we have, but I believe that we will never know what we are fully capable of, and we have so much more that we can accomplish. If you've seen Facing the Giants, then you most likely remember a specific scene where the coach challenged one of his key football players to do the death crawl with another player on his back. The initial deal was for the player to go to the 50-yard line, and that's it. As the scene plays out, other players eventually stand up, looking with serious faces at the scene at hand. Something must have been out of the ordinary, and indeed it was. The player ended up in the end zone, doing the impossible in most people's eyes. I believe it's more important than ever that every teacher realizes they are that key player in the scene. Every teacher has poured out their heart and soul in their students this year. I am particularly grateful for those teachers in Midland Online Academy who have poured so many extra hours into their classes with even more challenges than those with students in the classrooms. It's easy to quit. It's easy to say the challenge is too great. Yet, a moment such as this is pushing us to give our absolute best. Most teachers feel like they are close to the 50-yard line. Yet, they are even more advanced than they know. Teachers all over, not just in our city, but our nation, have transformed teaching to a whole new level. Although the struggle is truly real, imagine how teaching is going to be once we get past the COVID-19 season and have the students back full-time without dealing with a pandemic. We will have a plethora of resources for those teaching virtually. We will have true experiences of what works and what doesn't, both virtually and physically in the classroom. We will see what is truly essential in our lessons since we have been challenged with not enough time with the students. Overall, we will see that we are better at teaching than we ever realized. In that scene in the movie, the coach was the one who continued to motivate and push him to keep going and to give his absolute best. Every teacher can look out during the school day, either in their classrooms or their live meetings, to see who that coach should be to keep us going, the students themselves. Even if there are certain classes that are more stressful than others, we have an absolute rare opportunity to not just prepare the future generation in academics and preparing for the real world, but to teach them how to face challenges that seem impossible. The more we love and continue to invest in each student through this time, the more that students will get a rare chance to see an educator who is trying to survive just like they are, but will never give up. As the students motivate us to do our best, we need to be doing the same thing to push these kids to reach the end zone without them even knowing it. My biggest challenge that I could give to any educator today is to have utmost patience. Choose to have an attitude that you will make it through, and you indeed will. This season of COVID will pass. We will get back to having all kids in the classroom without a pandemic in the way, and we will all be better for it. Just like those who train for a marathon, the exercise done beforehand is typically the hardest part because it is preparing you for a marathon that only lasts a fraction of the time invested in training. We are all in that training phase, and teachers will eventually see how their work so far will make things easier for next year when we are back to a new normal. Be patient. Your time is coming, and it will be so much better than you ever imagined. Patience is a virtue. And teachers most definitely have this virtue. DJ Rambo is IT Customer Support Coordinator for Midland ISD. Midland College Profiles by Rebecca Bell. MC Grad directs campus technology, network security. Daniel Ortega is proud of his 26-year service in the U.S. military. He is also proud of his degree in Information Technology Network Systems Administration from Midland College. Both of these things have led him to his current career as Director of Technical Services and Chief Security Information Officer at MC, a position he has held since February. Ortega retired from the U.S. Navy in 2014 as a Senior Chief Petty Officer. Throughout his tenure in the Navy, Ortega was stationed in various U.S. states from coast to coast. One of those stations was in Southern Illinois, where he took classes from Southern Illinois University and graduated with a bachelor's degree in workforce education and development. I was always eager to try new opportunities when the Navy needed someone for a particular assignment, Ortega said. That's why I was stationed in places that people usually don't associate with the Navy, like Southern Illinois and even Amarillo, Texas, where I served as a Navy recruiter. Of course, being in Amarillo felt like home to me. I grew up in West Texas and eastern New Mexico. My father was a roustabout in the oil industry. Ortega graduated from Lovington High School in Lovington, New Mexico in 1988 and immediately enlisted in the Navy. In 1989, he married Delma, whom he had known since he was 12. The couple are still married after 31 years and have two sons and two daughters and two granddaughters. After retiring from the Navy in 2014, Delma and Daniel Ortega returned to the Permian Basin and settled in Midland. Delma started working for Midland College in the Veterans Assistant Office, and Daniel went to work for a pipeline company. I got a job in the oil industry, but it never felt right, Ortega said. My father was killed in an oil field accident while I was a senior in high school. I knew that he wouldn't want me in that business. Thankfully, Delma introduced me to some people at Midland College. I realized that I could get veterans assistance for tuition, and I could take courses at Midland College, so I enrolled in the Network Administration Program. Ortega said that while he was in the Navy, he had several friends who were in the information technology field. He picked up some skills from them and was able to take care of many IT issues in his department. Computers became a hobby for me, Ortega said. I would go to garage sales and pick up old parts in order to build computers. So even though I had a bachelor's degree in another area, I really wanted to learn more about computers and try to steer my career in that direction. After my first class, I knew that I had decided to do the right thing. While he was taking courses at Midland College in 2016, he was hired as a work study in the computer programming department. Ortega graduated from Midland College in fall 2017 with an Associate of Applied Science degree in Network Systems Administration. He made the transition from work study to full-time as Information Technology Coordinator in February 2018. He earned a master's degree from Soul Ross State University last year. When I got my associate degree, I wanted to continue studying in IT. I searched for online programs that would fit my goals, and Soul Ross had a master's degree program in educational technology. The educational technology program was perfect for me. It combined elements from both of my bachelor's and associate degrees and built upon the knowledge and skills I'd learned in my undergraduate work. Daniel's approach to learning new things is to divide complex topics into smaller, more manageable pieces, Joseph Bonnke, Midland Assistant Professor of Information Technology, said. This approach is an excellent strategy for learning. It is also the foundation of troubleshooting and problem-solving skills, the two most valued skills of an IT professional. I am very excited that Daniel is on our team here at MC. His skills and knowledge are certainly an asset to the IT team. In early 2020, just like when he was in the Navy, Ortega seized the opportunity to try something new. When MC Vice President of Information Technology, Sean Shreves, was looking for a director of the newly formed Technical Services Department, Ortega asked for the opportunity to lead the department, and Shreves promoted him to the director position. Since that time, Ortega has led his 10-person team to be one of the most respected and efficient departments on campus. Ortega oversees all college information technology, hardware, and software, maintains the budget for computer replacements, administers network security, and ensures that the college has the tools necessary for safeguarding student and employee information. He supervises 7 computer technicians, as well as the college's network administrator and the network manager. I learned in the Navy that it's important to build a good team, Ortega said. When I interview potential employees, I make sure they will fit in with current members of the department. I look for skill sets that they can bring to make the department better. I believe all members of a team should help each other grow. Dynamics and good communication play an important role within any work group. MC students are our primary customers. We want to focus on issues that directly relate to them. Of course, we also realize the employees are important for a well-functioning college, so I make sure that we treat everyone professionally and fairly. Part of Ortega's responsibilities include reviewing calls and work requests submitted to the Information Technology Help Desk by both students and employees. He said that in the past several months, he has seen a huge decline in the number of emergency phone calls. He credits the decline to the fact that the technicians are responding to needs and that the team has streamlined processes. Daniel not only does a good job supervising, but also invests in the college in many ways. He is committed to helping his fellow veterans, taking care of student and employee technology needs, and mentoring his young staff. He provides a good working environment where his team is encouraged to grow and learn through experience and training. Three of the computer technicians in Ortega's department are graduates of MC's IT program, and two are currently working toward degrees in the program. I have two mottos, Ortega said. One is, invest in your own product. The other one is, training is everything, and everything is training. The first motto has served me well. The techs who I have hired from MC's information technology program are skilled and ready to start the job on the first day. They need very little on-the-job training. There is a very small learning curve. This justifies the validity of MC's information technology program. The second motto is one that I stress to my team every day. We are in a field that requires us to be trained extensively before we start working, but then we need to stay on top of the latest trends in computer technology. It never ends. Everything we touch is going to change soon. That's why I love what I do. It's exciting, constantly changing, and I'm never bored. When I started taking IT classes at MC, I had no idea that I would never leave. It was a great place to be a student, and it's a great place for a career. Rebecca Bell is Executive Director of Institutional Advancement.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, November 17, 2020. State of Education. Chamber to host education event. The Midland Chamber of Commerce will hold the 2020 State of Education event from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday at the Bush Convention Center. The speaker panel will include Margaret Spellings, former Secretary of Education, and Don Evans, Chairman of the Permian Strategic Partnership. Limited in-person tickets are available. Go to https://www.midlandtxchamber.com for more information. Meetings today. City Council, 10 a.m. City Council Chamber, City Hall, 300 North Lorraine Street. Public input sought for easy rider study. The Midland-Odessa Urban Transit District is undertaking a comprehensive operations analysis for easy rider to identify improvements to the fixed route system and paratransit and commuter services. Residents can attend one of two public meetings to provide input. 5 to 7 p.m. today at Bush Convention Center, 105 North Main Street. 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday at Holiday Inn Express, 5321 John Ben Shepherd Parkway Boulevard, Odessa. Members of the public may attend at any time during the two-hour period. They will be able to view exhibit boards and bus network maps at several stations. Staff and consultants will be available to discuss the study and answer questions. Comments and desired outcomes will be captured via a paper survey and comment cards, according to a press release from Easy Rider. Social distancing will be adhered to and masks are mandatory, according to the release. For more information on the public meeting or the study, visit www.easy-rider.org or contact Kayleen Hamilton, Project Manager, at 561-9990 or khamilton@easy-rider.org. Holy Trinity is collecting food for Jubilee Center. The Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity will be collecting food for the Jubilee Center. Donations may be dropped off at the door of the church's office 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. today and 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. Wednesday at the parking lot. For a list of food needs or for more information, go to holytrinity.org, call the church office at 683-4207 or Bert Bostick at 349-7882. Jubilee Center's Thanksgiving Pantry is Saturday. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit mssconnections.org. Jubilee Center of Midland needs help this week preparing for their Thanksgiving pantry on Saturday. Volunteers are needed starting at 10 a.m. today, Wednesday, and Friday. Contact Miranda at 520-0671 or director at jubileemidland.org. The Attic is looking for volunteers for help sorting and cleaning items and doing yard work. Shopping day is December 5. Contact Matt Waller at 203-5977 or matt at theatticfn.org. Students needed to help raise money for the longest letter to Santa. Weekend shifts will be available beginning Saturday at Midland Park Mall. Volunteers must wear masks. Contact Delphine at 553-3143 or delphine-bowie@sbcglobal.net. Wear blue for Children's Grief Awareness Day is this Thursday. Join Rays of Hope Children's Grief Center in wearing blue to help promote awareness of the needs of grieving children in our community. Share your photos on social media and use the hashtags Rays of Hope and Children's Grief Awareness Day. Contact Caitlin Workman at 684-5437 or kworkman@raysofhopemidland.org. Landscape Design Workshop Planned. The Texas AgriLife Extension Service Office in Odessa is hosting a landscape design workshop 6 to 9 p.m. today at 1010 East 8th Street. Cost is $65. Topics and presenters are Earthkind Plant Selection, Jeanette Castanon, Herb Selection, Barbara Porsche, and DIY Landscape Design, Debbie Frost. To register, go to westtexasgardening.org. Health Department is providing services. The Midland Health Department is providing clinical services by appointment only. Appointments will be scheduled from 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. To schedule an appointment, call 681-7613.
Death notices for Tuesday, November 17th. Fermin Velasquez Romero. Fermin Velasquez Romero passed away November 14th. Visitation will be held Wednesday, November 18th from 9 a.m. till 9 p.m. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Thursday, November 19th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Interment will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Survivors include his daughters, Mary Lou Romero, Delma Romero, Rosa Gutierrez, Yolanda Ortiz, sons David Romero, Raimundo Romero, and a brother. Arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Kimberly Wiggins. Kimberly Wiggins, 59, of Midland, passed away November 14th. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, November 17th at Nallie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Michael Patrick Mack. Michael Patrick Mack, 30, of Odessa, passed away Thursday, November 12th in Pueblo, Colorado. Funeral services are pending with Ellis Funeral Home. Rodolfo Rudy Portillo. Rodolfo Rudy Sanchez Portillo, 72, of Midland, passed away November 13th. Viewing will take place Tuesday from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. with a memorial service at 7 p.m. Tuesday, November 17th at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A funeral service will be Wednesday, November 18th at 10 a.m. at Iglesia Bautista Monte Sinai, located at 2105 South Baird in Midland. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens with Pastor Ben Chavez officiating. Rudy is survived by his wife, Nena Portillo, and their six children. Sons Eleazar Portillo, Rudy Portillo Jr., daughters Cruzita Portillo, Talina Portillo, Cindy P. Pivoral and Julie Ramos, a sister, Florinda Gomez, two brothers, Ben Sanchez and Raul Sanchez, and numerous grandchildren and great-grandchildren. Teresita de Jesus de la O. Teresita de Jesus de la O, 52, of Midland, passed away Friday, November 13th. Due to COVID concerns, the family is requesting private viewing and private services for family only at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home in Midland, Monday, November 16th. Mask is required. Funeral service was held Tuesday, November 17th at 10 a.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home Chapel. Burial followed at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her mother, Guadalupe M. de la O., two brothers, Eladio de la O. and Jesse de la O., and many nieces and nephews.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, November 17th, 2020, front page. Odessa Woman Gives Back by Sam Waller, S-W-A-L-L-E-R at OAOA.com. Whether keeping up with packs of middle schoolers or the latest trends in hairstyles, Nikki Jones has plenty to keep herself busy. Still, Jones has been motivated to spearhead a drive to provide handbags full of useful items for women who have lost loved ones during the COVID-19 pandemic. I'm hoping to just give back to them and let them know that there still is a blessing in disguise, Jones said. Jones, who works as a secretary at Bowie Middle School, also maintains a hairstyling practice through Wendell's Hair Designs, located at 3509 East University Boulevard in Odessa. It was there, she said, that she learned of a similar project. The inspiration behind it was one of my clients told me her church blessed some families all over Texas doing a project like that, said Jones, who has not had anyone in her immediate family directly affected by the disease. I thought that was so neat, but wondered why they wouldn't do it for our families here in the Permian Basin. She said it did really well, and I said that would be neat to be able to do something like that here. I thought I could send out a blanket email to my clients and ask them to donate a handbag and fill it with different things for women that have been affected by COVID. They've lost their husband or brother or uncle or whatever, the men in their life that were there to help take care of them due to COVID. Jones said she didn't want the project to become too extravagant, asking only for simple handbags and items that every woman uses. I don't want to be picky, she said. Women, we buy handbags like they're going out of style, so I'm sure if they have handbags that are used, or if they want to go out and buy a brand new handbag, that's fine. Fill it with things that women like, maybe gift cards or perfumes or body washes and feminine products, deodorants, lotions, just some things they can use. Those wishing to assist in the project can contact Jones by email at dwanichole@outlook.com, by text message or telephone at 432-853-6767. Because of her job at Bowie, Jones asks that calls not be made during school hours. She said the best time to call would be 5 to 9 p.m. Monday through Friday and any time Saturday or Sunday. Jones can be contacted online at https://squareup.com/appointments/24QDN6JKPD26X/styles-by-Nikki-NIKKI-OdessaTX. Jones said the project is still in its beginning stages, but she hopes to have handbags ready to distribute before the holidays. I am just getting started, she said. I want to have everything done in December. I want women to be able to pick those handbags up the week before Christmas. I'm going to say December 18th and 19th. They can pick those up at Wendell's Hair Design. I want people to be mindful that this is a blessing, to be able to bless these women and give them something that you would want if you were in this position. Runoff should be December 15th for city seats by Federico Martinez, F-M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z at OAOA.com. A runoff election to determine three Odessa City Council contests is tentatively scheduled for December 15th, Mayor David Turner announced on Monday. City Council is expected to make that date official during today's work session. Vying to become the city's new mayor is Dewey Bryant, who received 43% of the vote, and Javier Hoven, who picked up 40% of the vote during the November 3rd general election. Bryant has termed out as the District 2 City Council representative. To be declared the winner in the general election, a candidate must get 50% of the vote plus one. Other contests that will be decided by the December 15th runoff are: in the at-large council race, Turner claimed 45% of the vote and Denise Swanner garnered 29%. Turner has served two terms as mayor, but due to term limits cannot seek a third term as mayor. He is making a bid to remain on council by running for the at-large seat. In District 1, Mark Mata picked up 44% of the vote and Michael Shelton received 19% of the vote. Swanner and Mata are political newcomers. Hoven is a previous city council member, and Shelton is the current District 1 representative. He was appointed in 2019 by the city council to fill the term of Malcolm Hamilton, who abruptly resigned. Council today will also tentatively approve the election of Stephen Thomas, who defeated Rachel Miner for the District 2 seat. Thomas received 55% of the vote, Miner 45%. A public hearing will be held today to allow council to discuss and determine what agencies and organizations will receive CDBG coronavirus funds, Turner said. The city has a pot of $1,013,413 in CDBG dollars that various organizations earlier this year submitted requests for. Board to consider improvement plans. OA News at OAOA.com. A public hearing on targeted improvement plans for dozens of campuses will be held as part of the regular Ector County ISD Board of Trustees meeting at 6 p.m. today. The meeting will be in the first floor boardroom of the administration building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. The board also will consider approving the plans. ECISD is taking steps to protect against the spread of COVID-19 among staff and within the community. Everyone is required to stop at the front desk, have their temperature taken, and answer screening questions prior to accessing building. Visitors are required to wear a face mask. Some of the other items up for discussion are: discussion of and request for approval of revisions to the Texas Association of School Boards local policy regarding campus or partnership charter schools. Supplemental agenda material said every Texas school district has the authority to authorize charter schools under Texas Education Code, TEC, Chapter 12, Chapter C. Approved partnerships may receive additional state funding, and schools with an overall F rating in the 2018-2019 accountability rating system are eligible to receive a two-year exemption from specific accountability interventions, the material said. After review with TASB Legal and in collaboration with TEA, the Texas Education Agency, we have cleaned up some language to be in alignment with the most recent updates to the model policy. There are no significant changes. The district has issued a call for quality schools and is taking proposals for Bonham Middle School and to leverage more space for pre-kindergarten students. Under Senate Bill 1882, passed in 2017, districts can go for funds for innovation or turnaround. Superintendent Scott Murray has said ECISD will go for support on pre-kindergarten and turnaround for Bonham. Partnerships can be innovation partners or turnaround partners. A PK3 innovation partner is needed to provide space to serve three-year-old students that the district's early education centers do not have space to serve. Bonham is now in its fifth year of improvement required under state accountability standards. Consider approving the appointment or reappointment of Student Health Advisory Council members. Request for approval to add Grand Falls Royalty ISD as a member district of the Ector County Regional Day School Program for the Deaf Shared Services Arrangement Agreement. Request for approval of connectivity donations. Leadership will provide data they are monitoring related to the opening of school, current modes of learning, and how those are working, adjustments being made, and next steps. In closed session, the board will hear the recommendation of the superintendent to give notice of proposed termination of term contract to Noel Gillespie Francisco, and hear the recommendation of the superintendent to give notice of proposed termination of term contract to Jesus Martinez, the agenda stated. Public comment and opening and closing remarks by Murray also are on the agenda. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 8,206. Ector County negative, 29,840 out of 38,599 tested, with 553 pending, 130 deaths. Recovered, 6,249. Active, 1,827. ECISD daily cases, 27 students, 27 staff. Midland County, 6,405 confirmed cases with 119 deaths. Texas, 1,027,889 confirmed with 9,371,443 tested. Total Texas deaths, 19,579. U.S. cases, 10,984,398 total confirmed and 245,470 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. CDECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/y6ntptuq. Quick hits. Free COVID-19 testing. The City of Odessa, in partnership with the University of Texas Permian Basin, has scheduled free mobile COVID-19 testing events at the following times, dates, and locations. Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Ratliff Stadium parking lot, 1862 East Yukon Road. November 21st, 8 a.m. to noon, Veterans Administration parking lot, north of the MCH Center for Health and Wellness, 8050 East Highway 191. Only 200 tests will be administered at each event for Odessa and Ector County residents. First come, first serve. Residents must show proof of residency. Participants must remain in their vehicle with the window up until a testing team member approaches you. For more information, call 557-6557 or visit tinyurl.com/y28qvja. No appointments or pre-registration required. Children as young as 3 years old are eligible for testing. In addition, free flu shots will be administered on Saturday, and free COVID-19 testing and flu shots are also available at Medical Center Hospital urgent care locations and the Odessa Regional Medical Center Community Clinic. For more information, call 557-6557 or visit tinyurl.com/y28qvja. From staff reports. 291 days. For 291 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through September 30th, the city has spent $62,843.51 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, November 17th, 2020. Page 2, read. Odessa Study Club. The Odessa Study Club met in the studio of Sonia Haney on November 10th. Haney educated members on the process of jewelry making and entertained us with anecdotes of her career as an artist. One story involved her guardian angels, pictured with her in the photo, that were accidentally sold at a gallery and found their way back to her 30 years later when a friend recognized it in an estate sale. Carolyn Tripp was recognized as the lone birthday girl for November. Sandra Blades and Annette McMinn served as hostesses. Annette and Pam Critcher will drive Meals on Wheels on December 7th. Courtesy photo. Page 3, OAOA.com. Drive-through vaccination microchip clinic. OA News at OAOA.com. Fix West Texas has scheduled a drive-through vaccination clinic and microchip from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. today through Friday at Floyd Gwynn Gym, 1015 North County Road West. For more information, email registration@fixwesttexas.org or visit www.fixwesttexas.org or tinyurl.com/y44JLBM7.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.